From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. It will be 4 more years for President Obama. His electoral total now stands at 290, 20 more than he needs to win re-election.
The count goes on in Florida and in Virginia, but unlikely wins in both could not help Mitt Romney.
Democrats have also held on to several key Senate seats in Missouri, Ohio, and Florida while flipping 2 more, one in Massachusetts.
The other in Indiana, where Republican Richard Murdoch had ousted longtime Senator Richard Lugar, but came up short tonight against Democrat Joe Donnelly.
You gave us a chance, and what we said was we think the most important thing is Hoosier common sense going to Washington, D.C.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. This is NPR News special coverage, and we are in a minute going to be talking to senior Washington editor Ron Elving. In the meantime, I want to tell you about New Hampshire's 2nd District, where the winner there is Democrat Ann McLean Custer, winning over Charlie Bass, a Republican, one more sort of fairly moderate Republican
and
falling in New
Hampshire.
And edging
closer, of course, to an all-female congressional delegation.
Historic for New Hampshire.
Yeah. NPR's Ron Elving is standing by right now. And Ron, tell us a little bit about what you're seeing from your vantage point this hour.
Well, I understand that the Associated Press has just projected that in the state of Maine, voters have approved the same-sex marriage, a measure which would be the first time voters have done that. We have seen same-sex marriage laws approved by courts, but this would be the first time it's been on a ballot and approved. And I believe out in Washington State, the voters have approved another measure legalizing recreational marijuana use as opposed to medicinal marijuana use. So those are late-breaking results from two different parts of the country, Maine and Washington State. I think the main event, of course, tonight was the big presidential battleground state test, 8 states that nobody thought they could call as of this morning or this afternoon. And at this hour, 6 of them have gone to the president, and 2 of them, Florida and Virginia, are trending towards the president. The president's lead in Virginia now is up to about 50,000 votes and growing. In Florida, we probably will still be looking at some ballots tomorrow afternoon that may not be able to be counted tonight. But if I had to bet right now, I'd say the president is going to carry all 8 of those battlegrounds. Now, a couple of them have automatic recount provisions. It's possible we'll have recounts. But it appears that his total of 290 electoral votes would be on its way to 332 with the addition of 29 from Florida and 13 from Virginia.
Ron, President Obama's team has always talked a big game about ground game. We've heard this term so often. Are we actually seeing the fruits of some of that? Are these states where they just have stayed the last 4 years?
I believe we are seeing the fruits of an extraordinary ground game. All day long we've been hearing reports, of course, mostly anecdotal, of how hard the Obama people, the professionals and the volunteers, were working the polls, were working communities, neighborhoods, bringing people out to vote, making sure people got to the polls, how hard they were working, how many of them there were. And while that is all, of course, anecdotal, in the evening we've been seeing a steady stream of vote totals, especially in these battleground states, indicating that those anecdotes were indicative of reality.
And also coattails. Did they exist? Who are the candidates who have really benefited tonight?
It's hard to see a lot of coattails, really, in this election. I suppose you could say that Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, who was a couple of points behind President Obama in Wisconsin, was benefiting from his coattails. But at the same time, you can look down the list here of many of these Democrats who have done well in the Senate. The Democrats have held their margin in the Senate, perhaps have a shot at still increasing it by 1 tonight. That's a big surprise. Most of those people won it on their own, or they won it because their Republican opponent made a big mistake. I would say that was the case in Indiana, that was the case in Missouri, rather than presidential coattails.
NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Audie.
Let's turn now to NPR's Ted Robbins. He's standing by at the Arizona Republican Party event at the Hyatt in downtown Phoenix. Ted, can you hear us?
I can, Guy.
Ted, first of all, give us a sense of the mood there at the Arizona Republican Party headquarters and this evening? What's sort of the mood there?
I think a little confused, to be honest. Mm. When they've got Fox News up on the big screen, and Fox, of course, called the race the presidential race for President Obama, but the state Republican Party chairman said, no, they haven't called Ohio yet. There's a bit of confusion here. I think they're down on that. On the other hand, they have not yet called the race for Senate to replace retiring Senator John Kyle, and they're hoping that Republican Congressman Jeff Flake will beat Democrat Richard Carmona. And we did just hear from the self-proclaimed toughest sheriff in America, Joe Arpaio, who appears to be headed to a sixth term at the age of 80. He's certainly the most controversial sheriff, that was the most expensive race in local race in state history. He was facing Paul Penzone, a former Phoenix police officer, and he appears to have beaten him. He, of course, being famous for his anti-illegal immigrant raids. So there's a mix here at this point, but the local races and the statewide races, not yet called. Presidential race, a little down.
Thanks. That's NPR's Ted Robbins in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to live special coverage of Election Night 2012 here on NPR. Stay with us. We'll have much more in just a moment. From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. President Barack Obama has won re-election.
Republican challenger Mitt Romney has not yet conceded the election.
But NPR projects that the president has defeated Romney in the battleground states of Ohio, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Nevada, Colorado, and Iowa.
And with those victories, Mr. Obama stands to win at least 290 Electoral College votes.
Earlier this evening, House Speaker John Boehner spoke at the Republican National Committee Election Night Party in D.C. He briefly thanked Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, but he spent most of his time talking about the House. Boehner stressed that for the past 2 years, the Republican House majority has been the primary line of defense for the American people.
And tonight, they've responded by renewing our House Republican majority. You know, with this vote, the American people have also made clear that there's no mandate for raising tax rates. And what Americans want that are solutions that will ease the burdens on small businesses, bring jobs home, and let our economy grow. Listen, we stand ready to work with any willing partner, Democrat, Republican, or otherwise, who shares a commitment to getting those things done. Listen, we're humbled by having again been entrusted by the American people with the responsibility of leading the people's house. We'll never take it for granted, and we will never let you down. God bless you, and God bless our country.
House Speaker John Boehner tonight in Washington, D.C.
And some news, some not too surprising news, Audie, to report tonight. Paul Ryan won his seat, has been reelected to his seat in the 1st District of Wisconsin. He will not become the next vice president, will remain in the House of Representatives. Let's turn to NPR's Tamara Keith. She's at the Ohio Republican Party's event in Columbus, Ohio. Tamara, give us a sense of what the scene is like there now that so many news organizations have projected President Obama the winner tonight.
Well, the party's over. They are taking down the banners as we speak. There are still a few people milling out in a lobby area, but the ballroom itself is completely empty. The party just completely deflated as soon as that call was made.
And what about the reaction to the Senate race there in Ohio? Sherrod Brown handily defeating Josh Mandel was spent. Something like $15 to $20 million in outside money went into that race. What is the sense of sort of over what happened there?
Well, you know, people here didn't seem completely surprised by his defeat, I guess perhaps that's because the polls sort of indicated that that might be coming. But you have to wonder, you're right, tens of millions of dollars were spent, tens of millions of outside dollars were spent on that race to try to push it to get rid of the incumbent. And you have to wonder, with this and several of these other Senate races, if there might ultimately be some buyer's remorse from those who spent so much money in the super PACs and other outside groups trying to knock out incumbents, trying to win the Senate for Republicans, and ultimately it just didn't work out.
Tamara, there was a lot of talk about those provisional ballots in Ohio before the election. Ohio has been called for President Obama. Is there any sense or any chance that Ohio may be challenged by the Romney campaign and that those provisional ballots may have to be counted in 10 days' time?
Well, I have not spoken with anyone from the Romney campaign. I know that there are some supporters here who certainly would love to see that happen, and some people have been talking about the recount. But it is, in fact, very close, and those provisional ballots could be called into action. Certainly, they expect there to be something in the neighborhood of maybe 200,000 provisional ballots. That's how many there were 4 years ago. But it's unlikely that would change the result, though, you know, you don't know until you crack open those envelopes 10 days from now. But the remarkable thing sitting here in Columbus, Ohio, this battleground area of a battleground state that had all of this focus, is that how suddenly irrelevant Ohio feels.
That's NPR's Tamara Keith at the Ohio Republican Party's event in Columbus, Ohio. Tamara, thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to turn now to NPR's Ari Shapiro, who is with the Romney campaign in Boston. Hi there, Ari.
Hi, Audie.
So, any word yet on when Governor Romney might make an appearance?
Well, here's what we know. The traveling pool of reporters that sits right by his side, more or less, has been told that they're going to be waiting 15 minutes to as long as an hour. So, we're not going to be seeing Mitt Romney come out anytime soon. There is no official concession, even though many major news organizations, if not most, have already called the race for President Obama.
You had folks like Karl Rove and many within the Romney campaign who were incredibly bullish about the map of gains that they expected to make tonight. Any response? Do you hear anybody backing down or starting to spin that in any way?
You know, they've said all along that they thought this was so close that it could cut in their direction. And in fact, you know, the popular vote is, it seems, going to turn out to be much closer than the electoral map. But in one swing state after another, the popular vote was just a little bit in favor of President Obama over Mitt Romney. And so that makes the electoral map pretty imbalanced in the president's favor tonight. One Romney staffer told me just a little while ago that the Romney campaign had 4 recount teams ready to deploy if it came down to that. This staffer was gaming out that the teams could potentially have gone to Ohio, Virginia, Florida, and then either a state like Colorado or Iowa, depending on how the game played out. But it just looks like it wasn't that close at all.
Ari, any word about the Congressman Ryan potentially coming out?
Yeah, he's here in the room. We've seen his staffers and his aides sort of huddling backstage, milling around. I've got to say, when you stand on the floor, there's a lot of empty space. There are a lot of reporters, and, you know, there are people there, but they're not so enthusiastic. The loudest sound I heard from this crowd was when CNN declared the race for Obama, a lot of boos.
That's NPR's Ari Shapiro. Thank you, Ari.
You're welcome.
Let's turn now to NPR Scott Horsley. He is at the Obama victory event that's at McCormick Place in Chicago. Scott, a decidedly different mood there from the Romney headquarters party in Boston, I assume.
Absolutely, Guy. The party's in full swing here, and good thing, because it sounds like they may have a long time to wait if Barack Obama waits for Governor Romney to speak first. The president is watching the election returns from a nearby hotel and is not expected to make his way over here until it's time for his own speech. But, you know, going back to the electoral math and the map, assuming that the president goes on to win in Florida and Virginia, where he's currently ahead with more than 90% of the votes tallied, he will have carried every state that he won in 2008, with the exceptions of North Carolina, where he really squeaked by in 2008 by 14,000 votes, and Indiana, which was sort of a lucky break for him the last time. So that's a pretty convincing ratification of the first of Obama term. He has been saying on the campaign trail, "You know me." That's been his message. And if you might argue that 4 years ago, Barack Obama was something of a blank slate that people could project things on, by now, these voters know what they're investing in when they cast their votes for Barack Obama. And, of course, that's a legacy which will now be preserved. If you think about health care or the financial reforms, the laws that he pushed through are now going to be preserved with this victory tonight.
Scott, let's talk about what we can expect in a second term. You've covered this president for the first term. He's still going to face a Republican House of Representatives.
Absolutely.
What is
Yeah. Even before tonight, you've heard tough talk from the House Republicans about drawing a line on, for example, the letting the tax rates go up for the wealthiest Americans. But here's what's working in the president's favor now. He doesn't actually need affirmative action by the House Republicans. If there is gridlock, if nothing happens, those tax rates go up automatically along with everyone else's. And I think the president is prepared now to play that game of chicken, knowing that if it comes to that and everyone's taxes go up, they can then start from scratch and pass a bill that would reinstate the Bush-era tax cuts for all but the wealthiest. So really the sort of defaults of the situation are now in the president and the Democrats' favor, which is a different situation than you had in the summer of last year when the Republicans held all the cards when they were having to raise the debt ceiling to avoid a really once-in-a-lifetime default of the full faith and credit of the federal government.
That's NPR's Scott Horsley. Scott, we will be speaking with you much more tonight. It will be a late night for you as well. Thanks so much.
And a little bit of news here. Electoral College votes, 13 votes for Virginia, goes to Democrat Barack Obama.
Puts him at 303 Electoral College votes now, Audie, which is looking like a pretty big electoral victory for the president.
We're going to turn now to NPR's Tovia Smith. She is with the Elizabeth Warren campaign in Massachusetts. Hi there, Tovia.
Hi.
So talk a little bit about the scene there. What was the tone that, I guess, now Senator-elect Warren, set?
Oh, there was absolute celebration here. I mean, just whoops and cheers as the results came in that she won, that the president won. This was one very, very fired-up crowd. And I can share with you some other news as well from a little bit north of here. We've been following the various ballot questions around the country on gay marriage. And it looks like there are four. It looks like possibly one win, maybe more. AP is predicting a win in Maine. We, NPR, are not quite calling it yet. Maryland and Washington State, the questions are still too close to call there. But supporters of gay marriage in Maine are claiming victory, and they're saying, I just got a release saying, quote, this victory is one for the history books. It marks a huge milestone, not just for Maine, but all of America. We knew the day would come, they say, when all families would be treated with fairness and dignity. This win, if it does turn out to be that way, would really be a big thing for the gay marriage supporters, not only because it adds more states to the list where gay marriage is legal, but also because of the symbolism. This is the first time that gay marriage ever passed by a popular vote anywhere. It breaks this long 32-state losing streak for gay marriage. It's really a first and a very big win.
NPR's Tovia Smith. And Tovia, thank you. And you're listening to NPR's special coverage. Follow us also at npr.org. If you're hardcore or staying up late, we've got all the results and more analysis. This is NPR's special coverage of the 2012 election.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years. The Principal at dreamagain.com. From CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And from America's Natural Gas Alliance, representing the natural gas industry and supporting nearly 3 million jobs across the country. ANGA.US. This is NPR. Thank you.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Guy Raz. NPR is projecting that President Obama has been reelected with at least 303 electoral votes. Now that's many more than he needed to win. We're waiting to hear from the candidates. Mitt Romney remains at a hotel near the Boston Convention Center where his campaign was planning an election night party. There's no word yet on a concession call from Mr. Romney.
In the House of Representatives, Republicans will hold on to their majority, and Democrats will remain in control of the Senate. One of the Senate victors is Democrat Tim Kaine of Virginia. And I think we're going to move now also to a winner for the House, which is...
Tammy Baldwin.
For the Senate, Tammy Baldwin.
Right in Wisconsin, yeah. She's in Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, the people's voice was heard tonight, Wisconsin. And come January, your voice will be heard in the United States Senate. Humbled and grateful, and I'm ready to get to work. Ready to stand with President Barack Obama. And ready to fight for Wisconsin's middle class. Now, I am well aware that I will have the honor to be Wisconsin's first woman U.S. Senator. And I am well aware that I will be the first openly gay member.
That's Wisconsin Senator-elect Tammy Baldwin speaking right now in Madison, Wisconsin.
I didn't run to make history. I ran to make a difference. A difference in the lives of families struggling to find work and pay the bills. A difference in the lives of students worried about debt. And seniors worried about their retirement security. A difference in the lives of veterans who fought for us and need someone fighting for them and their families. A difference in the lives of entrepreneurs trying to build a business and working people trying to build some economic security. But in choosing me to tackle those challenges, the people of Wisconsin have made history. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for the trust that you've placed in me, and all I can do is work as hard as I can to keep that trust.
An historic night in Wisconsin with Senator-elect Tammy Baldwin defeating Republican Tommy Thompson. She is the first openly gay member. She will be the first openly gay member of the U.S. Senate, defeating former Governor Tommy Thompson there in Wisconsin. Let's go to back to Chicago, where we find our Cheryl Corley. She's at also at the McCormick Place headquarters. That's the Obama Victory Party headquarters, not probably not too far from where Scott Horsley is standing. Cheryl, describe the scene there from your vantage point.
Well, right now we're kind of in a waiting mode. We're partying. That's what we're doing, a lot of party music being played. But it's been a very ecstatic crowd here, as you might imagine, when those vote totals came across. Or for Barack Obama, people started hugging each other. They were crying. They were waving flags. It was just a big sea of red, white, and blue. And, you know, many of the folks here were out in Grant Park 4 years ago when Barack Obama was first elected. And others here tonight worked in Wisconsin and Iowa canvassing voters over the last few days of this campaign. So it's just been a very emotional evening for all of the supporters who are here tonight.
Cheryl,
I was just going to add that I can tell you that a lot of the folks here I talked to have been very fearful that tonight was going to end up being much longer than it ended up being, and that they thought it was going to be a chance of, even becoming something like the Gore versus Bush trauma that happened in 2000. And what one woman told me, when she saw that it looked like the president won both the popular vote and the electoral vote, she said it meant the country was not as divided as it's often been made out to be.
Cheryl, very briefly, what do we know about the House races in Illinois? We know that Jesse Jackson Jr. was reelected. He, of course, has been suffering from depression lately and wasn't really out on the campaign trail.
Yeah, yes, he did. And that had really been expected, and it came true. There were three other really bitter races in Illinois, in the Chicago area. The 8th Congressional District, we saw Tammy Duckworth, an Iraq War veteran, beat out freshman Congressman Joe Walsh. Also, Republican Congresswoman Judy Biggert, who was seeking an 8th term, lost to former Congressman Bill Foster. And another win for Democrats in the 10th District as well.
It's NPR's Cheryl Corley in Chicago at the Obama campaign victory party. Stay with us. We will be back with much, much more coverage in a moment. You can also follow our coverage at NPR.org. Be sure to check it out. From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. The celebrations have begun for President Obama's supporters. Florida, the star of 2000, continues counting, but the president has won without it.
The story in Congress is more of the same, just a one-seat shift in the House and Senate.
It's special coverage from NPR News. We're joined now by NPR's Mara Liasson. And Mara, I don't think it's too early maybe to talk about this whole idea of a mandate. Have the Democrats or has President Obama gotten enough support here that he can go into these big discussions about the fiscal cliff, say, and really have some, I guess, weight to throw behind it?
Well, yes, I think he does. I think that he didn't talk very much on the campaign trail about what he wanted to do to avoid the fiscal cliff and solve the problems of tax reform and entitlements and the deficit. But he did say he wanted to take a balanced approach, which means more revenues, more tax revenues, along with spending cuts. And I think he got a mandate for that. And he also, I think, will approach the Republican majority in the Congress differently than he did in his first term.
That was my next question, the whole bipartisan concept.
Well, I think it'll be really interesting. These kind of problems that are now facing the Congress can only be solved with a compromise. This is not about trying to kind of push through a big project like health care. This is really different. This is about retrenchment and reform. And I think there are no more great liberal entitlements to pass. Healthcare was the last one. So I think this really will have to be something that he will have to negotiate with Congress. There already is a centrist coalition of senators, Democrat and Republican, working on this, trying to pass something like Bold Simpson. But the president was really clear. He wants to make sure that the wealthy still pay their fair share of taxes. I think he feels like he got a mandate for that.
But he's looking at the House, which is more of the same. We have two more race calls here for Iowa 3rd District. Tom Latham, that's a winner between two incumbents, and actually Jackie Walorski in Indiana's 2nd District. The more things change, the more they stay the same, it seems like, when it comes to the House. And what does it mean for that relationship?
Well, the House can't pass things by themselves, and we could. The Senate is still in Democratic hands, and the House has to think about its own future, and there will be a lot of people who want to run for president on the Republican ticket in 2016 who will have something to say about that. But I don't believe we can go back to the exact same kind of gridlock, zero-sum gridlock that we've had.
We want to bring in E.J. Dionne and Matthew Condonetti now to talk a little bit more. And Matt, to start, after all the sort of talk on the Republican side about sort of what would happen to the map here, what did happen?
Largely stayed the same. There seems to be only two real switches. It's North Carolina and Indiana. And so the Obama coalition came out. That was the real question. You know, we had months of critiques from the right about poll analysis and data analysis and conservatives saying over and over again, no, the Obama coalition is not going to show up. Well, the conservatives were wrong. The Obama coalition did show up. And they represented themselves very well. Romney won independents, but not by a large enough margin to actually swing the vote. He won whites, but not by a large enough margin to actually swing the vote. And on the economic issue, which was the most important issue, Obama fought Romney to a draw. And that's a big loss for Romney, because he based his entire campaign on his economic message.
E.J. Dionne, is there any way for Republicans to look at tonight's results in any way and see any kind of victory?
Well, they're going to try to argue that the fact that they held the House, which is their bastion, which the Tea Party took helped them take the last time, and try to make some kind of argument that this isn't a mandate. But when you look at the map, as Matt said, this is almost the same map Barack Obama had. At the moment, there is only one swing state that's clearly gone to Romney. Almost all of the others, you know, and Obama lost Indiana. The others either Obama has won or is ahead in. That's a big victory. It's also the fact that he was very specific on certain things, on the larger argument about government having a major role in American life, and not sort of wanting to cut it back in the way the Republicans proposed, and also wanting to raise taxes. And that's why I very much agree with Mara that the Republicans in the House can't go back to where they were. Obama asked the voters to settle the fight in Washington, and I think they did.
Well, we will wait and see what happens indeed. E.J. Dionne and Matthew Condonetti will be with us more in a moment. Stay with us. You're listening to live special coverage of Election Night 2012 from NPR News. You can also follow us at npr.org for up-to-the-second results and more. Stay with us.
staying here.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Guy Raz. The long race for the presidency is over.
President Barack Obama has won another 4 years in the White House.
But the battle in Washington is far from finished.
The president will still have to contend with bitter party divisions on Capitol Hill.
The Republicans will hold on to their majority in the House.
And the Democrats will retain their majority in the Senate. Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri won her re-election tonight, and we have more information on that race in a bit. She defeated Republican Todd Akin. Akin lost much of his support following controversial remarks in an August interview. He said that in cases of, quote, legitimate rape, a woman's body would avoid becoming pregnant, false comments. And that comment lost Akin the support of Republicans from Mitt Romney on down. But with control of the Senate on the line, the race remained close. McCaskill spoke to supporters earlier this evening.
You know, 18 months ago, there was a lot of the political chattering classes that were spouting a lot of information about the Senate race in Missouri. And they all said, it's over. It's done. It's too red. It's just too red. There is no way that Claire McCaskill can survive. Well, you know what happened? You proved them wrong.
Missouri's Claire McCaskill returns to the Senate, defeating Republican Todd Akin.
And let's go to St. Louis, Missouri now to our David Wellna. He is at Senator McCaskill's headquarters in St. Louis. David, surprise, no surprise. Obviously, there was a lot of controversy around that race. Claire McCaskill, before Todd Akin was made the nominee, was considered to be the most vulnerable Democrat running for re-election to the U.S. Senate. She won. She survived. That's
right, Guy. Republicans earlier this year thought that Missouri was going to be a cakewalk for them. They thought that this was, no matter who the Republican nominee might be, they thought that nominee would win this state. And it was looking like that would be the case until Todd Akin made this fatal interview in August when he spoke of legitimate rape. And at that point, the tables turned, and they have not turned back since. And the only question really going into this election was by what margin McCaskill would win this. And she did it really by picking up a lot of votes from Republicans who voted for Mitt Romney for president. Many people split their ballot because Romney won big in Missouri tonight and McCaskill won big at the same time. So many of those votes were coming from female voters in Missouri who were very turned off by Akin's remarks.
David, Democrats had to defend 23 seats in the Senate, Republicans just 10 seats. Democrats were very vulnerable. It appears as if they may actually pick up an additional seat in the U.S. Senate tonight, which would be a pretty stunning turn of events for Democrats.
At least an additional seat. So far, in terms of the races that we've called, Democrats have taken away seats from three Republicans in Massachusetts, in Indiana, and in Maine. And while Republicans have taken away only one seat in Nebraska from a sitting Democrat. So, if we look at that score, Democrats are running two seats ahead at this point. They also have picked up many of the open seats that in states where Democrats had retired. In five states so far where Democrats retired, Democrats have won to succeed them.
Also a banner year for women. I believe 18 women running for the U.S. Senate. We've had victory from Claire McCaskill and Tammy Baldwin and in Michigan and Minnesota and New York, those were expected. Widely expected that Deb Fischer in Nebraska, the Republican, defeated Bob Kerry. Quite an extraordinary night for women as well.
Yes, in fact, we had two states in which women were on both sides of the ticket in
Hawaii.
In New York State and Hawaii.
Yeah.
Whatever the outcome, we knew that there were going to be two women going to the Senate. I think we can look forward to probably the most women in the Senate that we've seen to date when they swear these winners in tonight in January.
That's NPR's David Wellna in St. Louis at Claire McCaskill's headquarters there. David, thanks.
Sure, Guy.
Now we're going to go to NPR's Netta Ulibi. She's at the headquarters of Rick Berg, the Republican, who is the Republican Senate candidate in North Dakota. Hi there, Netta.
Hi, how are you?
This race is obviously still very close. NPR has not made a projection yet, but can you talk a little bit about sort of how that race has been going?
It's excruciating, I think might be the right word. It has hovered. It's been incredible from one candidate to the other, a point and a half up now, 2 points down the next 15 minutes. It's just going back and forth like crazy. And there's a lot of talk about a recount. Right now, the two are separated by a point and a half.
A point and a half.
And 91% of precincts have reported already.
Ah, so is there any there isn't any concern about sort of how close the vote's going to be in terms of potential recounts or anything like that. It's just close and everyone's waiting.
There's a lot of concern about a recount. You know, right now in the convention room for Berg, I mean, it's just the hardcore people who are just hanging on, like waiting for some sort of news. And there's still some kind of hope that maybe when the western part of the state reports, maybe we will find out whether or not North Dakota will have a female Democratic senator.
Has there been any sign of the candidate?
No. No, not at all. At least here in Fargo, which is where Rick Berg is, we have heard that he's in a hotel room waiting for a little bit more of a concrete results. But at this point, it's highly unlikely that we're going to see him or her.
We've been talking a lot about women candidates this cycle, and Heitkamp obviously is one of those people have been watching. Do you see any other connections between the women who will be joining the ranks of the Senate this year?
It's been quite a mix, hasn't it? I mean, we have Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts. We have Mazie Hirono in Hawaii, who has been described by the Wall Street Journal as possibly being the first Asian American woman in the Senate and the first Buddhist. And we have Deb Fischer, a Republican in Nebraska. You know, it's refreshing to see that we're having a range of new female senators.
And certainly people who have raised a great deal of money. For Elizabeth Warren, one of the powerhouse fundraisers of the cycle.
Right, absolutely.
NPR's Netta Ulibi at the headquarters for Rick Berg, the Republican Senate candidate for North Dakota. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we've got a few results here to announce. As we've mentioned earlier, Tammy Baldwin has defeated Tommy Thompson in the Wisconsin Senate race. That makes her the first openly gay member of the U.S. Senate. Also, a rematch in New York's 24th District, Dan Maffei, against Republican Anne-Marie Berkel. He has defeated her in that rematch from 2010. Lots of ballot initiatives this time around, especially on issues like gay marriage and marijuana legalization. Let's go to NPR's Wendy Kaufman. She is at an event, a pro-initiative 502 event that is a marijuana legalization ballot initiative in the state of Washington. Wendy, tell us about where that initiative stands and a little bit about it, of course.
Well, it appears that 502 has passed. The measure has been called by the Associated Press. Indeed, at this hour, it is winning with a margin in excess of 10 percentage points, which is well beyond what any of the polls show. So it looks like a huge win for the measure. So what this measure would do is it would allow specially regulated growers to grow pot. You could sell it to adults in specially licensed and regulated stores, which would be run by private businesses. The sales would be taxed, and it would yield what the state says would mean hundreds of thousands of dollars in state coffers. They basically say that the existing policy of locking people up and treating possession and use of small amounts of marijuana for recreational use as a crime is just a failed policy, that it has created a terrible, you know, black market that's coordinated by thugs and gangs and all sorts of criminal elements, and that the only way to get rid of that, since you're not going to do away with people's demand for marijuana, is to sort of change the landscape, regulate it, and sort of bring those sales under control, so it's not controlled by the gangs.
Wendy, this, of course, would violate federal law. The Justice Department has suggested it would challenge that law in Washington State. Is anybody concerned about that?
They're very concerned about it. And indeed, it's very interesting. One of the key proponents, one of the key supporters of this measure, is a gentleman by the name of John McKay. And John McKay was a Republican appointed by President Bush to be the U.S. Attorney for Western Washington. McKay came to believe that the policy was failed. And he led the effort, really, here among others, to change the policy. And so they crafted this thing incredibly incredibly meticulously. Mm-hmm. They think they have written so that it will not violate the Commerce Clause. All the marijuana has to be grown and sold and transported within the state, not triggering the Commerce Clause. They think that they would withstand a challenge on that ground. The other thing they will have to contend with is whether the federal government will come in and challenge it on federal grounds and criminal statutes. But they don't really think the DEA is going to come in and arrest people who are smoking marijuana in their backyard. We don't know. It's never been tried before. It's going to be a really interesting story. I talked to the city attorney of Seattle tonight, and he said, you know, talks with the feds have already started. So it's going to be wait and see on that one.
Thanks so much. That's NPR's Wendy Kaufman in Seattle, Washington. Let's go to Michael Dimmock. He is here in the studio with us. He's also with the Pew Research Center. Michael, tell us a little bit more about some of the trends you've been seeing this evening with exit polls.
Well, I think the big story here, as Matt Contineni said earlier, is that the Democrats showed up. I mean, the question coming into this is whether there'd be enough enthusiasm in some of the core constituencies that carried Obama 4 years ago. And it looks like there was. We saw a lot of minority voters. We saw a lot of young voters. We saw a lot of women voters. We saw a lot of the groups that carried him come to the polls today.
And, Michael, did we make what were you able to sort of discern about generational trends, especially with women? There was a lot of talk about the war on women over the course of the last few months. How did that actually bear out?
Yeah. I think generationally it's interesting because the gap was maybe a little narrower. Obama did lose ground among younger voters from where he was 4 years ago during the real enthusiasm, but he still won young voters by a wide margin. I think the gender issue is also very interesting because that gender gap grew from where it was 4 years ago. Obama really retained the support of women that he had 4 years ago and lost ground among men, leaving a bigger difference between male voters and female voters than we saw.
But Romney, it sounds like it didn't exactly gain with those. You're saying that Obama just managed to...
Well, I guess Romney gained some more support from men, but Obama really held the female vote.
Michael, your last pre-election poll that was released on Sunday showed Obama winning 50% of the popular vote and Romney taking 47%. Do the trends seem to bear that out?
It looks like it. I mean, they're still counting, obviously, but a lot of states are still coming in. It's not an even distribution. I think it looks like it'll be a modest Obama lead at the final count, yeah.
Which would, of course, make it 2-for-2 for the Pew Center in 2008 and also in 2012.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Michael Dimmock. He is with the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. He will be with us this evening for much, much more. Stay with us. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News of the 2012 election results. You can also follow those results at our website, npr.org.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Guy Raz. President Obama won re-election by holding what's called the Midwest Firewall States of Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
Those states also elected three Democratic senators. In Ohio, Senator Sherrod Brown was re-elected.
In Wisconsin, Representative Tammy Baldwin won over former Governor Tommy Thompson. And earlier this evening, one of the most expensive Senate races in the country came to an end. Former Democratic governor of Virginia Tim Kaine has defeated another former Virginia governor, Republican George Allen. Allen expressed his disappointment to supporters in Richmond.
This campaign was for the people of Virginia. The people of Virginia remain in our hearts. The people of Virginia, until my dying breath, will have my eternal gratitude for the honor and responsibility of not just serving, but also being the one who got into the arena. And there's a lot of folks who say, gosh, why'd you get into this? Well, you got to get into the fight. This is a pivotal time in our country's history, and each and every one of you recognize the importance of this election in determining the trajectory of our country. We're not happy with the results, but we're still alive. And so long as they don't kill you, you can keep fighting. And
it's former Virginia Governor George Allen conceding the Virginia Senate race to Tim Kaine.
Earlier this evening, Tim Kaine delivered a victory speech in Richmond as well. Let's listen.
We were able to overcome the influence of the negative ads and prove once again the strength of people-powered grassroots campaigning. And so here's what it means, folks. Here's what it means. Our victory tonight proves that it's the number of people who stand with you, not the number of zeros behind a check, that decide elections in the United States of America.
Democrat Tim Kaine, senator-elect from Virginia.
Well, let's stick with Virginia now and go to NPR's Brian Naylor. He's at the Virginia Democratic Party's event in Richmond. Brian, of course, a victory for President Obama in Virginia tonight. Also a victory for Tim Kaine. A good night for Democrats in the Commonwealth.
Indeed, it was, Guy. And just playing off of Senator-elect Kaine's comments, there were a lot of zeros on the checks written in this race. There were about $53 million in outside spending. Groups like American Crossroads, Crossroads GPS, the groups formed by Republican operative Karl Rove, spent over $10 million on this race in ads against Kaine. It was just an extraordinary amount of money being spent up until the very last minute. Yet the results showed that a message counts, a campaign counts. It's not just the amount of money that's spent on TV ads.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, Kaine won by about 130,000 votes. I'm looking at the most recent totals in Virginia. And President Obama won the state by a much slimmer margin, about 60,000 votes, at least that's with some 97% of the precinct counting. 60,000 votes this time. 4 years ago, when he won Virginia, he won by 235,000 votes. So you can see that it was a much tighter race this time around.
And, Brian, we are getting reports from the Obama campaign that Republican Mitt Romney has actually called him. We will stand by to hear whether Mitt Romney gives a speech, a concession speech, in a short time from now. Brian Naylor, stand by for us in Richmond. Thanks so much, and we'll speak to you soon.
Right, meanwhile, thanks. We're going to turn to NPR's Ken Rudin. And, Ken, lots of redrawn districts in the House this year. Did they actually do what they were intended to do?
Well, they actually did. If you look at what happened in Illinois, the Democrats controlled the redistricting process there, and at least three Democratic incumbents went down to defeat. I'll give you four. Joe Walsh, Bob Dole, Judy Biggert, and Bobby Schilling, all Republicans, went down to defeat in Illinois, all because of redistricting. You could also look at North Carolina. North Carolina was redrawn to defeat Democrats.
More hits for Blue Dog Democrats,
Exactly. You know, it's interesting, and the Republicans look like they've picked up at least two in North Carolina. There are some other seats that haven't been called yet. But, you know, the fear of this, if you talk about the moderates who are leaving, the Republicans and the Democratic Party, you may wind up with, like, a Fox News and an MSNBC party. And, that, you know, the extremes on both sides just are the only ones who may be left in Congress, and the ones, the moderates, the Olympia Snows, the Ben Nelsons, they're leaving, and a combination between the two parties.
We're going to interrupt you because Mitt Romney appears to be walking out on stage to speak to his supporters in Boston. Let's listen in.
Thank you. I have just called President Obama to congratulate him on his victory. His supporters and his campaign also deserve congratulations. I wish all of them well, but particularly the President, the First Lady, and their daughters. This is a time of great challenges for America, and I pray that the President will be successful in guiding our nation.
A little bit, I mean, my audio.
I want to thank Paul Ryan for all that he has done for our campaign.
I'm here.
And for our country. Besides my wife, Ann, Paul is the best choice I've ever made. And I trust that his intellect and his hard work and his commitment to principle will continue to contribute to the good of our nation. I also want to thank Ann, the love of my life. She would have been a wonderful First Lady. She has been that and more to me and to our family and to the many people that she has touched with her compassion and her care. I thank my sons for their tireless work in behalf of the campaign and thank their wives and children for taking up the slack as their husbands and dads have spent so many weeks away from home. I want to thank Matt Rhodes and the dedicated campaign team he led. They have made an extraordinary effort, not just for me, but also for the country that we love. And to you here tonight, and to the team across the country, the volunteers, the fundraisers, the donors, the surrogates, I don't believe that there's ever been an effort in our party that can compare with what you have done over these past years. Thank you so very much. Thanks for all the hours of work, for the calls, for the speeches and appearances, for the resources and for the prayers. You gave deeply from yourselves and performed magnificently. And you inspired us and you humbled us. You've been the very best we could have imagined. The nation, as you know, is at a critical point. At a time like this, we can't risk partisan bickering and political posturing. Our leaders have to reach across the aisle to do the people's work. And we citizens also have to rise to the occasion. We look to our teachers and professors. We count on you not just to teach, but to inspire our children with a passion for learning and discovery. We look to our pastors and priests and rabbis and counselors of all kinds to testify of the enduring principles upon which our society is built: honesty, charity, integrity, and family. We look to our parents. From the final analysis, everything depends on the success of our homes. We look to job creators of all kinds. We're counting on you to invest, to hire, to step forward. And we look to Democrats and Republicans in government at all levels to put the people before the politics. I believe in America. I believe in the people of America. And I ran for office because I'm concerned about America. This election is over. But our principles endure. I believe that the principles upon which this nation was founded are the only sure guide to a resurgent economy and to renewed greatness. Like so many of you, Paul and I have left everything on the field. We have given our all to this campaign. I so wish that I had been able to fulfill your hopes to lead the country in a different direction, but the nation chose another leader, and so Ann and I join with you to earnestly pray for him and for this great nation. Thank you, and God bless America. You guys are the best. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks, guys.